This is JS Party, your weekly celebration of JavaScript and the web. Are you missing out on the Changelog newsletter? Every Monday, I curate, contextualize, package up, and email you the developer news worth your attention. It's a totally free way to keep up with the fast pace of the software world the easy way. Sign up today at changelog.com/news. Big thanks to our partners, Fastly.com, Fly.io, and TypeSense.org. Okay, hey, it's party time, y'all.
Hoi hoi, welcome to another exciting JS Party. I'm your host this week, Nick Nisi, and I am joined by my friend and yours, Jared Santo. Jared, how's it going?
Hey, I am doing well. I have worn my JS Party t-shirt as a form of silent protest to this entire episode.
That's okay, because to counter that, I'm wearing my TypeScript metal t-shirt.
Oh, gosh. So. Josh, what are you wearing over there?
I'm so ashamed. I have TypeScript socks and shirts in the other room, and I didn't think to wear them.
I'm gonna
have to come back in another 10 years.
Well, that amazing voice is Josh Goldberg. Josh, welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show. How's it going?
Thanks. I'm good. I'm excited to be here. That intro music is always a jam. So good.
Oh, yeah.
Lifts you up, gets you ready to rock.
Yeah. I'm so ready to scream about TypeScript at Jared now. That's it's primed to me.
I actually not sure why I'm here, honestly. I stumbled into the room. You guys were here, and I was like, oh, should we do a podcast? What are we talking about? What are we talking about, Nick?
I'll tell you why you're here, Jared. We are here to stage an intervention. So audience members, YouTube, here is Jared's personal cell. We're going to have you call and give him uplifting.
You're doxing me? I'm here to get doxed?
I'm kidding. That was an idea, though, of like setting up some hotline or something and having the audience call in. And
that would be funny. Yeah. It'd be cool if you would have got like all JS Party panelists to join one at a time. Like, oh, man, all my friends are here, you know, yes. And they're like, we need to talk.
Current and former.
Yes.
Just get them all in a room.
Just all of us. Okay. Well, I mean, I'm going to hear a lot about it today. Maybe I'll be converted, you know, don't hold your breath, but I'm excited to hear why you guys are so excited about a decade of TypeScript.
Yeah.
Decade plus.
Decade.
Yeah. So let's set that up. I tweeted a few days ago that I've officially been writing TypeScript and almost completely exclusively for 10 years now. The language is older than that. I think it's going to turn 11 in October of this year. And so I've been there pretty close to the start. And it'd be a fun episode to just kind of get together and talk about the last decade of web development, and TypeScript has had such a big influence on it, I think, you know, from my point of view at least, that it's worth talking about. And so, Josh, I hear you know TypeScript. You might have even written a book about it. And you're a great guest to also wax poetic about this and help me counteract Jared on this topic.
I'm just over here checking my email. You guys do your thing.
Can we get the personal email also to the audience? Wherever you go.
It's Joshua K. Goldberg at gmail.com. Actually, I might have just guessed yours correctly. We can bleep that if it's right.
I'm just thinking now, wait, I'm pretty sure that email was taken. So you just doxed someone else.
Somebody else.
Josh. May or may not care about TypeScript. At the end of this day, I think they definitely will, though.
Yes. Sorry about that, other Josh.
Everybody email that address with your TypeScript hate and then send them JS Party and tell them, hey, check this out. Hopefully they're into the web.
There is a small set of other Joshes who I've been in a perpetual SEO battle with for the last few years. And it's really annoying because a lot of us have had steadily increasing career success at the same seeming rate.
Okay. So, wow. Who's winning?
One of these days, one of us will win. Not me, actually.
I'm really lucky on that account. I don't have really any SEO pressure from anyone else on my name.
Right.
I kind of own it. Somebody did offer me $1,000 for a Nisi domain name once, and I totally sold it. And they bought it and set something up, and now it's a park domain. And so I'm waiting to get it back pretty soon.
Oh, that's a nice turn of events.
Yep.
So you have no SEO battles, but you also have no SEO content, you know, like you're not really, you don't have a book you're selling, you know, you blog once every other year.
But the potential.
That's right. Your follow potential.
The potential.
My clout score is through the roof, right?
That's right.
Remember clout?
I do. K-L-O-U-T, right? It was like it was like a website for tracking people's internet clout. I actually had an idea for this as well back in the day, which I think I built a very early prototype. It was called Tally with three L's, T-A-L-L-L-Y. It was back when Dribbble was big with, you know, three B's. And it was like the thing was like internet points. Who cares? And then it was, we do. And it was like, we're tracking all your internet points, you know? And the idea was like make it into an API. And so you could actually aggregate all your internet points and have like a total score. Kind of like I think what Clout did and I was joking. Yeah. It was like a fun side project for a couple of days. Clout did it as like a startup, I think, with VC money. Yep. But I was like, why have Reddit points? Like Reddit doesn't need to, not everybody needs to implement freaking points. Like just do it once and have an API and we could all have them in one place. And then I started thinking, do I want to have the API of everyone's internet points? And no, I don't. So I stopped. But then Clout came out and did it for real.
And to call back to the pre-show, I think there's a South Park episode on this with theoretical internet dollars.
Oh, and you're talking NFTs or what are you talking?
It was all of the people who were early memers, like the Chocolate Rain guy.
Chocolate Rain. Some stay dry and others feel the pain.
Oh, yeah. Leave Britney alone guy.
Leave her alone.
Right.
You know, all those.
And, Star Wars boy.
Yep.
Oh, yep. Yeah. We just watched that one.
And the whistle goes woo. Yes, I don't know that one. Insert soundbite right here.
Nearly every muffler shop in Oakland is installing Whistler Tips. It's a piece of metal welded inside the exhaust pipes that makes the car audible for almost a mile.
Tell me about the whistles.
The whistles go woo!
Anybody that has it in their neighborhood's going to be totally driven crazy.
It sounds like what?
Well, you want a woo-woo? It's that whistles.
What about them? Like if they made real money, is that the idea? Like, what was like, South Park about?
It's been so long. Josh, you just watched it.
Yeah, the idea is they're still waiting for their checks. So they all beat each other up and more violent line.
And more
violent. This is the episode. This was actually a really big episode. It's the one where Butters does the what song, which I actually learned last week was an existing meme. They didn't just make that up on South Park.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's an actual what video online predating South Park of fame. Yeah.
Well, yeah. To that end, Clout, I'm still waiting in line for my theoretical internet dollars.
Check. Yeah.
What? Where's it at? let's talk about TypeScript.
Yeah.
Talk me into it.
So TypeScript.
Are you convinced?
Yeah. Did that convince you, Jared?
You've convinced me to talk about it with that enthralling conversation.
Well, TypeScript came out in 2012, I think, October of 2012. And it was probably around the end of another heyday of a compile to JavaScript language called CoffeeScript. And Jared, you look like you are probably a CoffeeScript guy. Is that accurate? And I say that only because I know that you have an affinity for Ruby and it is a Ruby-like syntax.
Right. I was a CoffeeScript user. I liked CoffeeScript. I think CoffeeScript had a lot of really good ideas in it. And I'm glad that the JavaScript folks took some of those ideas and integrated them into the language. So I think it was somewhat, I wouldn't call it revolutionary, but what's the word? It kind of like spurred on new innovation, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
And yeah, I like TypeScript. I don't have any problem with significant white space languages. Some people just hate those. I think they're kind of cool. And I liked it. But it was a thing that I migrated everything to. And then eventually, when JavaScript got better, migrated everything off of, which was a huge waste of time.
There was a time where I feel like we cared so much more about white space. This is like the pre-prettier days, the pre-automatic formatting days. Like, we cared about that stuff. And there's problems, or at least maybe I recall problems between using like spaces and tabs in white space significant languages. Was that the case?
Yeah, for sure.
I'm just now realizing, I think a lot of the tools we're talking about have two major value props, only one of which ended up being the really important one for that tool. Hmm. Like CoffeeScript gave you the value of using what would become new JavaScript features much earlier. And it had the, in my opinion, dubious value of being a significant white space language. Dubious because that's not for everyone. Right. And then what we cared about later on was that it gave you the new features. And looking back, the white space thing ended up not being so future-proof. And then in TypeScript, there's a parallel there because TypeScript was similar. You get the like new JavaScript features today, and then also the type system. And then the type system now has been what's stood the test of time.
Mm. But Nick, you do like the new features aspect of TypeScript, don't you? Like you use it as your standard of what you can use because it's going to cross, you know, compile or transpile back into something that's usable with polyfills, or I don't know how it works, honestly, but
yeah, absolutely. I think that's a big benefit that you get because like back when this came out, like the other competition for that was like 6 to 5 and that, which became Babel and Babel plugins, you know, and anyone can write a plugin and then anyone can use that plugin. And who knows if it's going to actually become the way that the language works later on, or if you're stuck with this weird Babel plugin to enable your weird syntax.
Right.
And because of the restrictions on what actually gets added to TypeScript and, you know, having the big power horse that is Microsoft backing that, like they really only let stuff go into the language except for decorators when it was stage 3 or later. And so you were pretty much guaranteed that it was going to be something that was actually part of JavaScript. And this was just a way to add it to the compiler to use it today, whenever possible.
Mm-hmm. But to Josh's point, the type system is like, that's where it's at, right, Josh? Like that's the horse.
Yeah. I mean, it is nice and convenient that TypeScript lets you use new features now and has a transpiler for, but these days, a lot of folks just use TypeScript for the type system.
Yeah, for sure.
And then the fact that something is supported in its syntax is like a nice, this is how it's going to be for us kind of statement.
Yeah. And I think we can get into this too, but the, like back then too, like it came out in 2012. That's 3 years before ES6 really became finalized, which had like what 30 something new features in it. And then like, there's so many significant new features every year. And I feel like, you know, we're still pushing that forward, but it seems less and less, like it's 3 or 4 a year maybe. And they're not like massive, you know, arrow function level changes. They're more incremental, you know, here's a new function for arrays, or here's a new function for a new way to handle promises or things like that. So they're less significant, not to say that they're insignificant at all. I think that there's a lot of cool stuff coming that I'm excited for, but it's more palatable and it's not something where you're like clamoring to get at it. Whereas like there were real pain points in JavaScript prior to 2015 and they started really being addressed in a significant way post 2015. And TypeScript was a way to opt into those features before they were actually ratified into the language and available everywhere.
So you mentioned it's 11 years old.
Yeah.
And you've been using it for 10.
Yeah.
So what took you so long?
I remember when I first heard about it, it might've been somewhere like Hacker News or something like that. Like, oh, this. And I saw, oh, great. First off, it was from Microsoft, which back then didn't have the reputation they have now, I don't think.
They've done a lot of repairing to their reputation over the last 10, 15 years. Yeah,
definitely. Definitely. And then like, I never really, like I played with CoffeeScript a lot, but never really like dug into it. And it felt like at the time, like, oh, this is a good thing because it's kind of dying off and losing popularity. So I can skip TypeScript because it's going to be the same thing, which really wasn't, but I wasn't excited for it at all in the beginning. And then I was kind of led kicking and screaming into it at the company I worked at because there was a lot of interest from a lot of the senior devs there in it. And they started building a framework, like an MVC framework for it. And so I got exposed through that, but I really did not like it at the beginning. And I can get into why, but I'm curious what your stories are like when you first heard about TypeScript and how you got led into it.
So I interned at Microsoft in 2014. Over the summer, started full-time end of the summer 2015. And just going back to GitHub, my first TypeScript pull requests are from spring of 2015. So I managed to intern at Microsoft like a couple of years after TypeScript was publicized and not adopt it. And I think the reason why I didn't was because, similar to you, I had seen CoffeeScript come and start to go. This was a new, untested thing. I didn't want to, you know, take a big bet in it, especially since at the time I was trying to be more open source oriented and most folks did not know TypeScript. It was a big barrier to entry in theory. But as TypeScript started to get more powerful, especially when they started adding, I don't think at the time it was logical types in the type system, but a lot more type system ways to represent kind of the wacky JavaScript code, that's when it really solidified that, okay, this is worth the barrier to entry, give or take. Never looked back.
So I first heard about it, I must have been 2015, because we had Anders, help me with the last name, guys, Heilsberg. It's one of those names where it's got a J and an L, and I lose all confidence. We first had Anders Heilsberg and Jonathan Turner from Microsoft on the changelog in April of 2015 to talk about TypeScript. So we knew it was a thing. We knew that it was a superset of JavaScript. We knew that Microsoft was very excited, and a few other people were also excited. And so we're like, well, let's do what we do and do a changelog episode. And was very impressed by both those guys and by the effort and by a lot of the decision making. Of course, the pedigree is there for like, okay, this is a serious thing that seems like it's in very good hands with the people who are doing it. But I was writing CoffeeScript back then, so like I already had a compiler compiling my stuff to JavaScript, and I actually had felt the pain of that over the long term, like just having that transpile step and the shifting sans underneath you and all this kind of stuff. And so I never adopted it. I just thought it was cool, interesting, and didn't really necessarily solve my particular pain points, which are not many because I work in small teams, often just myself, on small code bases, often with JavaScript sprinkles. I'm just not writing so much JavaScript with people that I'm sharing it with that I just don't have a lot of the pain that a lot of other people are feeling. And so I just never had a reason to pick it up. Then JS Party came around and you came around and you loved it so much that I just knew I had to take an antagonistic perspective on TypeScript. and ever since then, I just can't try. I can't like it. I can't, because I have an entire persona developed around hatred of this putrid language. And so, yeah, I couldn't try it. I couldn't use it if I wanted to, Nick, because my reputation precedes me at this point.
Oh, we'll all forgive you if you want to let go and try it.
Yeah, that would be a cool storyline for JS Party, you know?
Yeah.
Like Jared finally comes around, and now he likes TypeScript. I've written a little bit of TypeScript. I don't want to be completely ignorant of it, although why not, right? Because my level of disdain is like pure ignorance. I think, Josh, last time you were on the show, you were trying to convince me that it was good, and I was like, no, dude, it's not going to work because like I'm not even listening to your arguments right now. They don't matter to me. Which is no way to improve as a human being, is it?
Yeah. What an interesting choice to make as an adult.
Right?
Well, maybe you should be like a sleeper agent, like a double cross kind of thing, where you go learn TypeScript in order to, you know, be better informed and hating on it. Which honestly is how a lot of TypeScript enthusiasts started. They learned it really understand how to criticize it, and then just realized how awesome it is in comparison.
That's a good way of converting people. Nick, thinking about your early hesitations reminds me of your early React hesitations.
Yes.
And now I'm starting to think maybe another reason why our listeners might listen to JS Party is to just hear everything Nick Nisi thinks is bad right when it comes out, you know, and then just adopt that stuff and have a successful career, you know, because you seem to be against all the successful things when they first drop. And then like years later, you're like, oh, this is great. But you don't like it right away. What's up with that?
Have you heard the good word of tailwind?
Yes.
I hated it when it came out.
All right. Hook us all up. What do you hate right now? Like, what's the newest thing that just came out? We know you like Lua, so we're not going to be interested in Lua. Don't adopt Lua. It's going down. What do you dislike right now? What's new?
Oh, I've always disliked non-modal text editing. So does that count?
That's long term. No, it has to be a brand new technology that you're just like, meh.
Ooh, I don't know. That's tough. I'm a fan of React server components and like this whole server side renaissance within the React community, but it's not ready in my opinion. It's not good now.
It's not good yet.
I want it to be.
It's not quite what we're looking for.
I know.
But if you come up with anything that's brand new, like it hits Hacker News number one, and you're like, this is a terrible idea, it's never going to work, let us know.
We'll do.
We'll do a show,
Nick,
on
it. Okay. I would love to see you try out Astro and then use multiple.
Oh, I love Astro.
Oh, damn. Never mind.
Now we're just throwing stuff at him. Like, how do you feel about, I can't think of anything.
We actually had Fred on a few months ago now to talk about Astro 2. And after that, I was like, all right, I'm going to try it, because I was like, I really like the idea of being able to use React, like, you know, to make my blog or whatever. And so I started down that path and I'm like, oh, cool. I'm going to make a React component for this. And then I was like, wait, it doesn't need to be a React component. It can just be an Astro component. And everything is an Astro component. And I don't have any React in there. So I went there because of React, and I'm there now because I think Astro is just awesome on its own.
Mm. Come for the React, stay for the Astro.
Yeah.
That's a good story.
I haven't played with the view transitions yet, though. That's going to be cool.
Oh, it's so nice. It was like 4 lines of code, 5 at most. And now all my pages on my site just fade. I didn't customize it. I didn't do anything. It's just there's a fade now instead of a sharp. And oh, it's so nice. It's going to, I know for a fact that in like 6 months, every website is going to look like this, and it's going to be like the bootstrap of 20 whatever. But
yeah,
for now, it's nice.
So going back to the beginning, there's some things that I really hated about TypeScript that I wanted to air out, because it wasn't good in the beginning, I don't think. And I had valid reasons to not like it at the time. Mostly it was just like the ergonomics of it. Like going from using AMD, the asynchronous module definition, and never needing a reload, needing a reload, but never needing like a compile step or any kind of like even stopping to wait to concat files together, like with other popular module libraries at the time. Like it was just so nice being able to quickly make a change, hit refresh, make a change, hit refresh. And then TypeScript comes around and it's like, here's a compile step, and you have to wait for it to compile. And I was using Vim back then too, and I didn't have any kind of tie-in. I don't even know if there was a language server back then. I think it predates the language server. Yeah. So like I was just adding all these types and like getting no feedback on it except for at compile time, which wasn't great. And then when you compile, I specifically remember, and I thought this was like a dream, so I had to go back and check. I checked the first project that I worked on, and it's called Mayhem on GitHub. I can put a link in there. It's quite dead now, but I am listed over in the contributor site. I'm listed in there, but then I cloned it and looked through the commits, and I have 0 commits in there. So I have no idea why it even puts me there. But
you tricked them.
I did work on it a little bit at some point, I think. But like, if you go look at the tsconfig in that file, in that project, there's no include or exclude. There's just a files array. And every file that you want TypeScript to transpile, you have to manually list. And if you add a new file, you have to add it to that. And if you remove the file.
No wildcards or no way of like doing folders. Yeah.
Nope. I think later on came like a files glob. And then later on came include, which was much easier. But then at the same time, when you did that compile, so let's say I had like a file called model.ts. When I compile it, it would create a sibling file to that called model.js. And it was impossible to navigate the file tree in there, because you'd have like 3 files of everything or 2 files of everything. And I didn't have like the cool nerd icons at the time telling me this one was TS and this one was JS. So it was like, usually the extension was cut off and I just picked the wrong one every time. It was terrible. Those are like little things, but like it was not fun.
I just looked it up. TypeScript 2.0. So 2.0, which was years later, it added strict null checks, fixing the $1 billion mistake. It added optional, like a whole bunch of logic rather than optionals. And that added includes in your tsconfig.
Nice.
That's wild.
Yeah. So 1.0, not super great, but we stuck with it and it was a good decision. For sure. So were there any things like that? You were at Microsoft at the time, Josh. Were there any pain points like that that you remember early on?
Yeah, that honestly was a big one. I think a big part of why that was so relevant for many people was that they weren't using Visual Studio, not VS Code, Visual Studio Core. And VS has projects which contain solutions, which generally explicitly list files. So there was this kind of difference between how a lot of Microsoft devs were writing JavaScript and then TypeScript versus how a lot of the community was with things like Runs and Gulp at the time. Mm. And that was honestly a pain point. I remember because moving to TypeScript was when I decided that I would start using Gulp, because that was the future. Streams were the future of build tools, and Gulp was going to be the way we did it. No, I think a lot of the complaints and blockers around me were mindset.
Yeah.
That JavaScript was still wacky at the time. We hadn't standardized or even come close to beginning to standardize imports and exports, for example. And I remember talking with multiple senior devs who just were not convinced that a type to superset or anything that's supersetty or looks like JavaScript is the future. Like this one person who had decades of experience was convinced that we would just continue to write C#. And that script sharp, which converted C# to JavaScript, would take over. And this ridiculous explicit imports and export crap would go away. And we'd all be using what's now called namespaces in TypeScript. it's just so much FUD everywhere.
Yeah. I think that piece, though, like something that looks like JavaScript is like part of the core keys to TypeScript's success.
I think so, too.
Yeah. Think about what was happening back then, too. Probably prior to this, probably 2009, 2010 area. Google had Chromium version called Dartium that shipped with Dart and JavaScript as like languages in the browser. And they were trying for a long time to replace it with Dart. There was CoffeeScript, obviously. There's Elm, ClojureScript, PureScript, Reason, all of these languages.
Oh, yeah. Reason ML.
Yeah. But they tried to extinguish JavaScript rather than extend and what's the second part of that?
Embrace, extend, and then extinguish.
There we go. We haven't gotten to the extinguish part yet with TypeScript, but maybe.
Right. They're just waiting for that hammer to drop.
Yeah. 20 years in, though, I think that's
like, you know what? This entire thing was worthless. The other thing is like for a long time, people have been saying WebAssembly was going to make JavaScript no longer the lingua franca of the web and make it so where you're writing C# directly inside the browser, you're writing Rust, you're writing Go, you're writing whatever your language of choice is right in the browser. And I mean, they've been beating that drum for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And I think you see like here, there, a little bit of that, but I'm still waiting for WASM to destroy JavaScript, you know, and TypeScript by association. Of course, anytime someone says they use JavaScript, Nick Nisi, in his head, he actually has a regular expression that replaces it with TypeScript. Don't you, Nick?
Yeah. Do you as well, Josh?
Yes, actually.
And like 99% of the time, you're right, right? I mean, pretty much it's dominant now.
Yeah.
It's like the E-Corp thing from Mr. Robot, for those who've seen that show. It's just I don't even see the letter J anymore. But actually, I think WebAssembly is a really interesting play for the future. It's a slow burn. They're taking their time with it. There are all sorts of parts of the WebAssembly spec, like local file system access, that have taken or are taking years to solidify because they're trying to make that the future-proof standard. So unlike TypeScript, which kind of jumped onto the scene, was trying things out experimentally, WASM is going to be many, many years before it's ready to take over or even start taking over. And even then, I think it's still up in the air of whether it will be able to, whether they're going to, say, add in the ability to touch the DOM directly, which requires quite a few layers in the spec, like manual or rather automatic memory management. So until then, we're stuck without it. And a lot of people thinking that we will soon take over, which is a little annoying.
And at that point, will there even be an impetus to write many other languages? I mean, there's always going to be other languages, but JavaScript will be, and TypeScript by proxy, will be so ingrained in so many people who are coming into the industry from, I say from today on, but even from go back a few years, where it's the first language learned, it's the sometimes only language learned. And it's like, at a certain point, there's so many people with that as their core tool, their core language, that's like, hey, you can write this in Rust now. And it's like, well, that's amazing for people who write Rust, which is not an insignificant number of people, but comparatively, like, well, I like JavaScript, so I'm good here. I think there's still going to be so many people in that camp, you know, transliterate TypeScript in there, fine. Where it's like, yeah, is it going to kill it? I don't think nothing's going to kill it.
No, I think that it's such an approachable language to compare to some of these other ones where you might have to do or think about these lower level things. Like it's so ubiquitous and it's easy to approach it, but also it's pretty darn powerful. Like you can do a lot with it and it's everywhere. And I think that, you know, it's Atwood's law. Everything can and will be written in JavaScript or TypeScript. And there will always be a space for that. Of course, there's going to be use cases where another language might make sense, especially one that can compile to WASM.
Oh, for sure.
And that's great. That's great that we have that option or will have that option, you know, as it proliferates a little more. But yeah, I don't think it's going anywhere.
There's a lot of advantage to having a blessed path. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, especially boot camps, they learn HTML, CSS, JavaScript, React, and then maybe TypeScript in that order. And that means that a lot of community resources are much more fleshed out. It's a lot easier to find help, networking, social groups online. If we were to fragment into 12 different languages you can use to get started on the web,
right,
we might be able to innovate more by comparing them against each other. You know, battle royale competition of the languages, but it becomes a harder situation for newcomers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that we get a lot of that, or we have in the past, at least, gotten competition just within itself. And that through like things like Babel, which allows anyone to write a plugin to immediately test out some new syntax. And that's like a really great way to prove out a use case for a proposal to add it to the language proper, which is really nice. So let's shift gears and talk kind of about the present in TypeScript, the present day TypeScript, where we're at with it. And I'm just curious, what do you think is the most important or biggest improvement to the language since the earlier days? Josh, why don't you start?
Got to go with strict null checking.
Yeah.
I've been floating the phrase in front of people for a little while now, the billion-dollar mistake. Typed languages traditionally allowing you to pass null in a place that doesn't explicitly say it can be null, which is why in so many interviews for years and years, everyone was told to always check all your arguments to see if they're null and throw an error if so. Yeah, that's really exciting.
Yeah.
I feel like that to me was awesome, not just because it's really useful, but because it's a feature that TypeScript added before a lot of other mainstream languages, such as Java and C#. So that was TypeScript winning instead of just catching up to everyone else.
Mm. I think that sounds like a sweet feature. I've never used it. And I'm not being sarcastic. That sounds like an actually really nice thing. I mean, a lot of my adult life has been dealing with null and nil in various forms of nothing, you know? And it's difficult to write confident code when you're constantly having to check if the thing that you're dealing with is the thing that you want to be dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
You talk to people who've programmed in languages like, say, older C++, where the null safety is very difficult. And they're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then you talk to people who've never written not null safe code, people in languages like Swift, for example, which I believe also has this concept. And they're like, what the heck? How is that not the case to begin with?
Right.
So I think it's an instance of industry trends of us learning how to make programming languages better, where one language in particular is what introduced that to people, but you actually start to see it quite a lot across the industry these days.
Mm-hmm.
I think the best feature TypeScript has added was when they added Nick Nisi as the MC of TypeScript Conf. That was an excellent feature addition when you began MCing TS Conf. Isn't that right, Nick?
It's the start of the megachurch.
That's when they really started getting a lot of people switching over when Nick took over TS Conf.
Right.
And then they planted him on JS Party and had every time we had a show, he had to bring it up, you know, just constantly bringing it up. Until the point that people just adopted the thing. So those are the two best features I think they've added in the last 10 years.
Can I put forward another one though?
Oh yeah, go ahead, Josh.
I just want to shout out logical types, like conditional types. Now that you can do logic in the type system, two reasons. One, it's hilarious. You can do all sorts of wacky stuff. Two, and more importantly, adding logical types and being able to have generic types that reference each other meant that TypeScript was able to represent really complex and yet common JavaScript patterns, like in utility libraries such as Lodash that would do weird things where you pass it in a string and get a property based on that string, which is horrible. No one should ever do that. So I think once TypeScript got to the point where it could represent the weird pretty reliably, that's when it really tipped over and people felt more comfortable or confident adopting it.
For sure. That is so big. Like there are so many things that you can do, and like some of the most mind-blowing examples that you can show people are like these really complex types that like nobody ever has to really think about except for the person that wrote it, but they just make things so much easier. And I'm thinking like some of those ones that do like string substitution type things, like we just added, you know, we have this like very sometimes deeply nested internationalization JavaScript or a JSON file that has, you know, all of our IE10N keys in. And we made that type safe by just like looking at the JSON and creating like a path through that so that every possible path through that is a string literal type that you can add to the function. It's just so much nicer.
Can you explain that more?
Yeah.
Help me understand that.
So if you have a JSON object and at the top you have like foo, the foo key, and then under there you have like foo.name and then .first, right? And right. To get to that, you would have to type the string foo.name.first or have right. that as your key to tell it how to go look through that. Mm-hmm. When you have one that's like ours, where it's like 3,000 lines long of all of these IETN keys, and you're like way down on line, you know, 1400, and you're like, okay, I see that this is called, you know, start date, but is that under some other thing? So you have to kind of look at the tabbing in to see how far
right.
deeply it's nested.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then look up, and you kind of just have to go up and up and up until you find it and then type that in. And then it either works, and it's usually like trial and error, like check it. Does it work? No.
Right. Do I have the right key or not?
Yeah. But we created a recursive type that just walks the path of that. And it just adds a dot separator in between every possible one. So then it gives you a giant string literal that is just foo.name.first. And that would be an approved string that you can pass to this function. So then you don't have to go look that up at all. The downside of it in our use case is it's thousands of lines long, which adds like a significant overhead to actually like parsing that type.
That's what I was thinking, is like, when does that actual logic get applied? I'm assuming it's at compile time, right?
Well, it takes a while for the types to even show up as you're auto-completing in the editor.
Oh, I see. Cause it can be updated. Right.
So kind of working around that, but for your smaller use cases, another use case that I just added was, I wanted to be able to support some component things, some different colors for components. And I wanted it to really support any color that we make available through our Tailwind config. Right. So I made one that just walks our Tailwind config, our colors override, to set that up. So you have like, you know, deep gray 900, deep gray 800, 700, all of those. And so you can add those all. And then like we can create a type and pass in a prefix too. So it can be like BG dash this, BG or deep gray dash 900, or it can be text dash deep gray dash 800 or whatever. And that's a much more finite set. So it's very fast to do it and works really well.
I'm trying to think of downsides of that because it sounds like a crazy hack, but I'm trying to think, besides the parse time of an infinitely growing, you know, unbound set of potential keys, are there downsides to that? Because it sounds pretty awesome.
No. I mean, it adds that strict typing, right? The only downside is that it, at some point,
there's no runtime implications.
No, not at all.
That exposes two theoretical pillars of TypeScript. One, no runtime implications, which except for very old, very rare features of TypeScript that are debatable in the community, that's true. And then it also exposes that complex types come from complex logic. In both of those cases, I think, Nick, you're overcoming what could be perceived as a type deficiency in your setup. One is that you have this giant JSON file and you're doing this very specific logic. Should you split that file up? Should you instead pass like an array of strings? Like, there are alternatives one could consider.
Absolutely.
And then same thing with Tailwind. You want string parsing with an explicit allow list of strings. If only Tailwind was type safe, then you wouldn't have to do this, but it's not. So you do.
But the key is I set it up once and I just check that in as a type. And I set that as like the, you know, this argument is going to be this type for this function or whatever, of this prop that I'm passing to a React component. And then everybody else benefits from it. So it's just a one and done setup.
Yeah, but if you go and make Tailwind type safe, everybody else benefits from that as well. So you could do that work, Nick.
Can you make it type safe?
I don't know. Can you? It's a challenge.
To think about that.
He's thinking about it. That long pause is Nick actually thinking about it.
Yes.
Challenge maybe accepted.
I think that present day, the thing that benefits everyone, not just TypeScript devs, but JavaScript devs and other languages as well, is the proliferation of the language server. Like
100%.
That is so nice.
This is a changelog news break. It's official. Advancements in computer vision have rendered CAPTCHAs obsolete, as new research shows AI bots are 15% more accurate than humans at picking which images have a bridge or a sign or a bicycle or whatever in them. The researchers recruited 1,400 participants to test websites that used CAPTCHA puzzles, which account for 120 of the world's 200 most popular websites. The bot's accuracy ranges from 85 to 100%, with the majority above 96%. Meanwhile, we mere mortals check in at a pathetic 50 to 85% accuracy, and we answer slower than the robots to add insult to injury. I've surmised this for months now, as we've been unable to ward off spam account creations on changelog.com, no matter which shiny new CAPTCHA service we tried. There are other efforts in the works besides CAPTCHA in order to differentiate between robots and humans, but so far, the robots are winning. You just heard one of our five top stories from Monday's Changelog News. Subscribe to the podcast to get all of the week's top stories and pop your email address in at changelog.com/news to also receive our free companion email with even more developer news worth your attention. Once again, that's changelog.com/news. Did you see that Supabase even started a Postgres language server protocol? So you have like very specific completions of just Postgres syntax inside of an editor just because now there's a Postgres language server protocol. So like, and it's not, you know, you don't think of it like, it's kind of a thing you wouldn't think of. But of course, it does have its own flavor of SQL query language, right? And so that wouldn't exist if it wasn't for the underlying protocol that was, you know, invented alongside TypeScript, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool.
That's awesome. Did not know about that. Thank you.
It's pretty new. I think it's alpha at this point, so your mileage may vary, but it's just like taking a thing and extending it where you wouldn't expect to extend it. And you're like, oh, wow, that would be really, really nice.
Yeah.
And NeoVim loves it.
Speaking of, I am learning, though, that I guess I didn't realize this at the time, but TypeScript's like language server or whatever you want to call it predates the actual LSP protocol. So there's like features that they implement weirdly or differently, which things have to work around. And I'm learning that through NeoVim, specifically through NeoVim plugins like TypeScript.nvim, I think, and NullLS, which are both projects that have, as of like last week, been archived because the developer, you know, justifiably doesn't have the time to work on them anymore. And so They're out there on GitHub. Someone can fork them, but he's
done
archiving them to say he's done. Mm-hmm. And there's some significant changes coming to NeoVim 0.10 that will probably break a lot of things that he's not ready or willing to fix.
Yeah. Did you see or hear Andy Walker on the GoTime podcast talking about NeoVim? How he says it's like, he just watched that clip that we just posted the other day or today maybe. He says that it's like having a Jeep or having a hobby where you end up spending so much time, you know, working on the thing versus using it productively. So I think he recently switched off of NeoVim after a long time of use just for that reason. There's so much. I just thought of you when I heard that because a lot of your time and effort, free time maybe even, or time that's not free, gets spent in now having to go find new little extensions, right? You gotta replace this. What is it? Is null or LS null?
NullLS.
NullLS.
Yeah.
Well, that's just the wonderful world of open source, you know?
I did see that clip today, and it reminded me of a tweet that I saw yesterday. I refuse to call them anything but tweets, by the way. And I'll just read it. It's from Kaka Rudo, and I'll put a link in the show notes. But while VS Code is like a Toyota, Vim is like a Lambo. The difference in the car and the driver of the car. Both can get you from point A to B, but the experience is vastly different, and I don't need to mention performance.
Well said.
Let me light the editor wars again. Find me.
Wow.
Well, the thing about a Lambo is, you know, when you have a broken part, it's very expensive and time consuming to find a replacement part on a Lamborghini. Oh, whereas,
fact.
Nick, I thought you were a TypeScript dev, not a PHP dev.
As I'm learning, we're all slowly becoming PHP devs because every cool thing that's coming out in like Next and all these server languages or server like implementations is like, oh, yeah. Cool. Laravel's been doing that for years. So we're all just like
it's
slowly.
It's been kind of fun to watch all these front enders discover server-side rendering. You know, it's like, hello, guys. It's cute that you gave it its own name. It's kind of just the de facto way that people were making HTML pages for years. But I think we get to a better place overall, you know, because you kind of like loop back around with better foundations. And hopefully it's all healthy. It's just like it's just the pace of innovation is you know, there's this like encyclical thing where it doesn't go straight up. It goes like around in circles a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's difficult to overcome because we don't have very much institutionalized knowledge, right? Like you, when you don't know the past, then you're doomed to commit the sins of the past. And that's a lot of what we do is we come in, we have this very specific domain. We don't have the institutionalized knowledge passed down very well. And it's like, now we're reinventing what people were invented in the 70s, because there's no way for us to know that that stuff was already worked on in the 70s unless we have some sort of passing of the torch. Anyways, that's off topic, but something I think about a lot.
So one question I did want to ask about present day TypeScript is like how it fits in with learning. I'm obviously quite divorced from being a new developer at this point. And Josh, you wrote a book on learning TypeScript. Like I'm curious, like your thoughts on where, like what it's like to have this, like, you know, you want to get to this language, but do you go through JavaScript first and then go there? Is it just de facto that you will end up at TypeScript today? Like it seems like a lot to take in when you're like, oh, here's this language, but don't use that language. We're going to use this language that compiles to that language, but it's mostly that language with some added things that you'll spend hours working on that never actually get run. And you know, it's a lot.
Nick, I love this side of you. The TypeScript bashing side. It's
great. I'm sad. My work here is done. I can just leave and let Nick do it. He's doing it better than I do.
That means you have to switch roles, Jared.
I love it. I think it's the best thing since sliced bread. But Josh, you were going to say something actually intelligent.
Debatable. Yeah. I think we're in a transitory period. And the downside is, as you've described, it's this weird learning situation. A lot of people want to learn TypeScript and don't know JavaScript. And I've become more and more resolute that I don't think it's optimal to learn TypeScript and JavaScript at the same time. And I've always been resolute that I don't think one should ever feel required to learn TypeScript in the general context of the industry. If you're applying for a specific job or you're going for like a specific team or role at work and they need TypeScript, fine. That's the specific situation. Mm-hmm. But there are still companies that don't use TypeScript, and you can still be a very good JS or JS plus whatever developer without knowing it.
Definitely.
So, yeah. I don't like, there is a trend in the industry of you need to learn X, where X is actually an array of 15 items, half of which are, you know, about to be archived. I don't like that. But I will say, though, that TypeScript is such a beautiful extension on top of JavaScript, just from a pure theoretical standpoint. Like the pedagogical line of you learn all the runtime stuff in JavaScript, you get good enough to know why it's such a miserable experience at scale, and then TypeScript fits on top of that. It's a very nice way to bookend your JavaScript journey.
Yeah, so. Definitely.
Sometimes you do have to feel the pain before you can actually appreciate the solvent to that pain.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something I think that is often overlooked in learning. Like,
yeah,
things are this way for a reason, and it might look like obvious or seem silly from the outset. But when you did it the other way and realize why it's that way, like it changes your perspective completely.
Yeah. Sometimes the best teachers let you go through that pain for a while, and then they reveal to you a better way, and you don't like them anymore, but you do learn. Yeah, I've had that experience, and it's long-term beneficial, but it's short-term. You're just like, do you despise us? Why are you doing this to us?
One of the big misconceptions that I think causes people pain like that is what TypeScript folks call type-directed emit, which is not a thing that's generally done. It's changing your JavaScript code based on types in your TypeScript file. That's not a thing TypeScript does. Like, for the most part, TypeScript file equals JavaScript file plus new type system features that don't happen at runtime. Mm-hmm. But folks who learn TypeScript and JavaScript at the same time don't understand why they can't just solve their runtime problems by dynamically looking at the keys of an interface or other type-directed emit changes. And you need to walk through the process of why JavaScript runs the way it does, why it is that TypeScript is a development time only thing. And it's painful to get there, but the system evolved the way it is for a reason, like a very good set of reasons.
And, definitely. Yeah. That's a really good example of that too. Like you know, when you're thinking about interfaces or those type only things, like I don't even realize it anymore, but that's just like bifurcated in my mind. Like this is one namespace and this is the other. And there's areas where they can't cross. Like I can't do something that would have runtime effects on something that is not going to exist in the runtime. And it's not always clear when that's going to be or at least not without a lot of failing at that for a while.
I call it going upstream, that values can inform types, but types can't inform values. And whenever you're trying to go the opposite way, it's painful and annoying, and you end up duplicating code.
Yeah.
Which is why, honestly, a lot of more recent things in the community have done such a good job of this because they were designed with TypeScript in mind. Things mm-hmm. like Zod are fantastic and great for typing because they're the theology of them fits well with the TypeScript theology.
Yeah. There was another thing I was going to ask. Well, you mentioned a little while back about these lists of things they need to learn that are deprecated. And I was going to ask your thoughts on TSLint, since I've occasionally seen you commenting on an AI-generated list of like best practice things that constantly suggest TSLint as a solution.
I feel so bad. I legitimately don't know who is the author of this Twitter bot. They're trying to do a nice service for the community, and they're using AI to help them generate tweets that point out useful things. And it's such a nice idea. And then this one thing is they keep recommending TSLint, which has been dead since 2019. It's so painful to me. I don't want to be mean online, but yeah. An example of one of the downsides of TypeScript, I think, is the complexity point of it. That now that it's been out for a decade plus, we understand the pros and cons. And one of the cons is that it's added complexity for every part of your tool chain that has to deal with syntax, especially mm-hmm. the linter. Because back in the day, we had TSLint, which was the TypeScript linter, and TSLint was killed because it was essentially a clone, but with different internals of ESLint, which was much more widely accepted. But now the way that you have to use ESLint for TypeScript is kind of hacky and clutched together because ESLint was never designed with this in mind. So it's this whole pain in the butt. It's I'm trying to maintain a PG-13 at worst rating here. I will say the ESLint team is working on this. We in TypeScript ESLint are working on making it simpler, but like the large rewrite of ESLint that'll make it really beautiful is going to be many, many years in the future, I think. So I don't know. Transitory pain, right? Like that's one of the downsides of being in a rapidly evolving ecosystem like JavaScript. It's that things are shifting out from under you constantly and they never really get settled until it's been a while.
Now, I want to transition to talking about the future of TypeScript a little bit. But to do that, I want to talk about a trend that's been going on pretty much since the beginning. But it seems to be maybe growing or changing as we go along. I'll say like, to tie them all together, in the past, like one of the biggest hurdles that I didn't like at the beginning about TypeScript was the compile step. And then I realized that all of these cool features coming to ES 2015 at the time and later were going to require a compile step. And then that made it okay because I got all this cool new stuff and I could use it. And then, you know, the compile step just became a part of the way I work. Also, like one thing that I went from like pre-TypeScript constantly doing was using like the Chrome debugger to step through things. Cause I was like, am I actually passing an array here? Is it actually an array? And I'd have to like go check, right? That like precipitously dropped off after starting TypeScript because I didn't have to go check that stuff anymore. And it was just accurate, which is great. But now we're seeing more of a trend, or there's always been like a steady trend of like, let's not use TypeScript. Let's just use JavaScript with JS doc and go from there and then generate types for the TypeScript lovers out there, or for the JavaScript lovers, because they benefit from it too in the language server. Do you think that trend is going to continue or grow? And I'll remind you that there's a proposal for type annotations to come to JavaScript, which might change. It changes my opinion on it, at least.
What a juicy set of topics. I want to start my essay by being annoying and nitpicking your phrasing.
Okay, please do.
It is accurate but not precise to say that folks who switch to JavaScript with JS doc over .ts or TSX files are dropping TypeScript. They're just dropping TypeScript native syntax. I know you know this, but for the world at large, TypeScript is multiple things. It's the idea of the syntax, it's the language spec, and then it's also a whole bunch of tools built on JavaScript and TypeScript syntaxes.
Yeah.
And you can drop just the TypeScript syntax and still get the benefits, as you've described, for example, type generation of the rest of the toolchain, the actual programmatic parts. So I think there was some confusion when SvelteKit, Svelte? One of them, for example, dropped just the syntax, but they're still using the toolchain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Nick and I argued about that and when it happened, because I brought it up as like, hey, this is interesting. And he's like, no, it's not. And then we talked about it. And then finally he was like, well, I'm actually, once we talked it out, cause I knew that it was just the comments in the first place. And then once he realized that, he's like, oh, that's, they're still using TypeScript. And I'm like, well, yeah, I didn't, or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Nick, I knew that all along, but I don't know why anybody would like prefer JS doc syntax over just inlining the types. I don't understand.
Cause we love writing comments. We just, our favorite thing to do is comments, commenting our code.
That's where Copilot excels. Copilot writes amazing comments for my code.
Oh, type annotated comments?
No, I don't type annotate them because I rely on TypeScript to know the types.
Right, but what if you didn't?
Who doesn't do that?
No one will ever know.
SvelteKit, apparently. You know. Anyways, so yes, that is a distinction. I think that's a valid distinction to make, Josh, or a valid nitpick.
Yes.
Because I think you're right, in principle.
For sure, for sure. But like, I don't know, my reasoning around asking this is like, you're leaving that to theoretically avoid a build step, right? But still get all of the benefits just with this worse, in my opinion, definitely just my opinion, syntax.
It's a trade-off. The comments. Yeah.
No, that's not just an opinion. It is worse. JSDoc syntax is actively worse than TypeScript native syntax. I'm not saying that it's not worth it sometimes, but it is a worse experience that actually has fewer features.
Definitely. Definitely. But let's look 5 years in the future, 5-10 years in the future. I don't know how long the type annotations proposal will go through, if it will go through, but assuming that we're positive and that it does, then you get the best of both worlds.
Well, do you like it, Nick? When it first came out, did you like it?
I like it because you don't, like, I'll get the TypeScript without a compile step, right? You could just have
When it first came out, what'd you think?
My concern is, and I don't really know.
See, it's okay. It's going to be, it's going in. It's going in. Okay, Nick didn't like it when it first came out. So it's going in. I found one. I found a good example.
Beautiful.
I'm with you.
Finally did it.
Yeah.
So we can assume it's going to go in. It's going to be standard.
It's guaranteed now. But that's going to like take away from that. Now you could have everything in line and it would work great and look great and be readable to a TypeScript developer, but you are not necessarily having that build step. And so, like, will projects like Svelte or SvelteKit, whoever switched over, would they then switch back and just start inlining things because it's a cleaner syntax? Like, I don't know, being forward thinking, it seems like TypeScript is the better solution to stay with, because if you assume that it will be just an ignored part of the language, then you're set. My concern with that proposal, though, is will it hamstring TypeScript development by forcing them to live within whatever sections they carve off? And will they be able to innovate as fast or as much as they have?
What an interesting question. My guess is it won't hamstring TypeScript, other than in good ways. TypeScript has always tried, especially the last majority of those 10 years, to just innovate in the type system, not in syntax, except for type system syntax. Mm-hmm. And they honestly haven't added, to my knowledge, any new type system spaces. Like, they've changed how existing spaces, such as declaring and then inside an interface or an object type, or assertions like as or the exclamation mark, they've messed around with those a lot, but there's really very little new stuff going on.
Sure.
I would assume that for TypeScript, the major areas of innovation are going to be around tooling and integrations, not so much radical new type system concepts. I mean, it's been a decade. Like, what else is there?
True. But like, I feel like, and I don't know, I haven't looked at the proposal in a long time. If I remember correctly, like, the interface keyword's not part of that, or the type keyword, right? So theoretically, if you wanted to go for a zero build system usage of a TypeScript-like language with that, then you'd probably have to put those in a different file, like a d.ts file or something, and then be able to reference them, is my guess. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a proposal and it's the first proposal. In theory, there's nothing stopping them from adding those later, right? But that's going to be even more years.
Right.
Yeah. I think long term, it might simplify things, but short term, it's definitely not going to completely overhaul how we're doing everything.
Yep.
Yeah. I agree with Josh.
Thanks.
It's a good take.
I have a potentially hot take. I think it's damaging that we haven't had many major competitors to TypeScript since Flow flamed out.
Yeah, I'm surprised every day that I remember that React is actually written in Flow.
Yeah, it's the only thing.
Yes.
It's the only thing. Where would a competitor come from? Where would a competing project potentially arise?
JS Party open source.
JS Party hackathon. CoffeeScript 2.0.
Yeah, just make another CoffeeScript.
Yeah.
But one of the things that helps ecosystems is competition. For right? sure. A tool feels weak compared to another one, so it makes up for it. And the TypeScript team has done a great job of continuously innovating and working. No shade here. But it's the same paradigm, the same model. And there have been little prototypes of like dependents or more advanced type systems or writing in Rust, but we haven't seen them get adoption enough to incentivize the industry.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, or things like the idea to rewrite it in Rust or some of the things that the Dino team are doing to try and accommodate that. But I also think that Dino and Bun are helping to add that much needed competition to Node and to that ecosystem.
Yeah. What are the major pain points today with TypeScript, like where you could actually carve out a niche and be like, we're 10x better at this? Because that's usually how that kind of improvement, usually what A, motivates somebody to actually do a competitor because it's a lot of work. And then B, oftentimes is enough to get the existing incumbent, that's the word I'm looking for, to get the incumbent to actually react. Usually you have to have some sort of a 10x improvement and some sort of key pain point.
Yeah.
Not cost. What are the pain points when you have a really large JSON blob and you try to?
Yeah, speed, I think.
Well, there's your Rust, perhaps, or like a lower level systems language.
Right.
Yeah. There's a particular team member of TypeScript who's just recently merged a change for the next TypeScript version that reduces its bundle size a lot by deduplicating files. Shout out Jake Bailey. But yeah, just thinking about structurally the things that someone wouldn't just see get into TypeScript. In the existing structure, it's native level performance would be a big one.
Mm-hmm.
That unlocks, I think, two areas. One is just directly, it's fast now, yay, your JSON files are great,
right?
But then there are also more advanced type system concepts, like I referenced 10 seconds ago, like effects types or dependent types, where the type system can understand that if, let's say, you call a particular function that changes a variable, that variable's type is narrowed or changed as a result of calling that function, which is not something TypeScript supports today because that would be absurdly complex and difficult to do.
Yeah.
Like just from a runtime perspective, that's a very complex operation. And mm-hmm. JavaScript isn't really fast enough to do that type of thing.
Yeah. At a certain point, you're getting into the esoteric though, whereas unless that kind of a shift or a rethink allows some sort of massive tooling gain, perhaps, which allows people to instantly see, be like, well, it's like TypeScript, but look what it can do. I think that's probably a more difficult way to carve your way in versus the performance move. But yeah, I would love to see competition always.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with Josh's take. Not so hot.
There's a pattern here, I think.
Disagree with Nick. Yep. Agree with Josh. I'm a simple man, Nick. I have a simple algorithm.
So we're getting close on time, but I wanted to ask kind of as a closing thought, what would you like to see added or changed to either JavaScript or TypeScript going into the future? We might have already answered this a little bit, but I'm curious if you have any like specific wants or needs. It can be something proposed as well.
Remember the pipeline operator?
I was going to say this. Yes.
Yes.
I love pipelines.
Well, wait. Yeah, let me say it first so that we get agreement instead of disagreement.
I'm torn here. Nick likes it and Josh likes it. I don't know what to do. Actually, I love pipeline operators. I use them in other languages and they're great. So I would love to see that work its way in. So that's a unanimous there. That's a JavaScript proposal, right?
Yeah.
I want null and undefined to be merged into one word. I want a fork of JavaScript.
I agree with Josh. That's actually a great idea.
That's it. A compiler to TypeScript that just merges those two together. There's our startup weekend.
Call it null defined, undenull. Now we got to workshop the name. Neither of those
none defined
are hitting. None defined.
Null Nisi.
Oh, Nick Nully. That's a good note to end on.
Yeah. Cool. Well,
climactic.
Great.
Poignant.
I guess I'll ask one more question. Jared, do you have any current or future plans to use TypeScript?
Current or future. So what's the difference? I will note that I have used it I used it with you, Nick. Remember, we used it on a project here, right here at JS Party. I was complaining about it. That was before it was good, though. I remember you saying, like, well, this needs to be upgraded to 3.0 or something when it really got good. Oh, so yeah. I have used it a little bit, even though my history with it is very minimal. I think Josh convinced me. I'm open to it. I would try it in earnest and report back. So is that a future plan? Yeah, I would call that a future plan. No current plans. I don't have an actual use case, but I would be open to trying it because of Josh.
I like how specific you are. Nick, it is not you. Don't feel good about this.
Well, Nick's been working on me for years, and you know, I can't give him the pleasure of having convinced me to change my mind, but Josh, I can give that pleasure to, because that sounds like a more reasonable thing to do. So it's because of Josh's arguments.
Two episodes with me and you're good to go.
Yeah, there you go.
Multiple years of working with Nick.
He's the master.
All right. Well, I'll go ahead and end it there. And I'll end it with a call to action to our listeners. If there is a specific feature that you want Jared to try out, tweet at him. Tweet at him that feature. Tell him your favorite part of TypeScript or why he should do it. And we'll do that. That's less doxing, right?
That's right. Just tweet at me. I'm Jared Santo on x.com. Future-proofing the episode by referring to it as x.com right now.
What's that?
And I'm Jared at changelog.social if you're on the Fediverse. If you're on Blue Sky, I'm probably on there, but I haven't logged in yet. And I'm on Threads as at Nick Nisi. So hit me up there. Does that cover them all? Did I miss any networks? LinkedIn, you can get me there.
Yeah.
Shoot. Yeah.
MySpace.
Send me a tweet, Al, on LinkedIn.
All right. And with that, thank you for joining us. Thank you, Josh, for joining us as well, and for being the voice that Jared can actually hear. That's great.
My pleasure.
Awesome. Thank you so much, and we'll catch you next time.
We have a bonus segment for our Plus subscribers coming right up. Well, you know what? I'll go ahead and let everyone listen to this post-show combo. It's a short one. And if you aren't directly supporting our work with a Changelog Plus membership, maybe give that a consideration. We'd love to have you with us.
Changelog Plus, it's better.
Speaking of support, thank you once again to our partners, Fastly.com, Fly.io, and TypeSense.org. And to our beat freaking residents, the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Next up on the pod, Amel sits down with Mark Erickson to discuss the long transition from CommonJS to ES modules and some of the work he's done in that arena with Redux and more. Keep your podcast app tuned right here. We'll drop that episode into your queue next week.
Thanks, Josh. That was great.
First of all, yes, thank you. This was a lot of fun. Thank you for having me. Second of all, Nick, I love how the more you get insulted, the happier both of you get. Just as soon as we start crapping on Nick, it's smiles everywhere.
It's all I can do to hide the pain.
It's his comfort food, you know? It's just what he's... It's the only thing he knows, you know? My favorite part of the show was when I asked you about type annotations proposal, about what you thought about it initially, and you weren't really catching on. Josh and I were there already, but you were like actually trying to explain your thoughts and stuff. I'm like, no, how'd you feel when it first was announced? And then you finally realized where it was a callback.
Yeah.
That was hilarious. So good show. Good show. Josh was the perfect guest for this show. So good choice, Nick. Josh, thanks for joining. It was awesome.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
Let's do it again in a decade. I'm serious. I would actually love to. I'm not saying don't talk to me till then, but I think it would be cool to do like another decade then.
I agree.
Set a reminder, Nick.
I will.
For 2033, we'll do it. By then, Josh will be like, WASM's just around the corner. I'm telling you.
Type annotations proposal is coming. Stage three now.
Stage three. Yeah. You can use types in TypeScript now. It's hit stage three. It's great.
Awesome.